online. Welcome to the Tony Legend Show. Kicking the show off this week with Cornell Campbell. That's Got to Tell the People. And thank you very much to Ruth for sending that one to me. All right then, it is Manchester Radio Online. It's Sunday night. Welcome to the Tony Legend Show. And thanks again for tuning in for what promises to be an epic broadcast. I'm here live until 10 p.m. this evening, and I have so many great guests lined up. Joining me after 9 o'clock is a very, very special guest, someone who I have wanted to interview for a long time, and someone who I have a lot of respect for. From one of Ireland's most famous families, his name is Jim Corr, and he is the drummer from The Corrs, an absolute legend and a hero in a lot of different respects. And he is fighting the New World Order, so to speak, and he's got an excellent website, jimcorr.com. It's definitely a great place to learn about the criminal actions of the global so-called elite. And we'll be joined by Jim after 9 o'clock, so stick around for that. Also joining me on the phone at about 8:30 tonight is Mark Daly from the BBC. He was commissioned to make a programme about Holly Greig last year, but decided not to make the documentary. And Mark will be coming on the show live to tell us his side of the story. And I'm glad that he's offered to come on the show, and I look forward to hearing his point of view. I'll also be chatting to Maureen Spalick tonight. She told her story on air here a couple of weeks ago, and then last week she found herself in a jail cell for sending her son a birthday card. Thankfully, she is out of jail now, and she will be telling us what happened to her before 10 o'clock. And last, but certainly not least, joining me in the studio all night is Aim from the Whole Truth Coalition. I've got Robert Green and Anne and Holly Greig. So thank you, everyone, for joining me tonight. First of all, Robert, I'll just bring in you in, if I can. Someone's just adding this on MSN as we speak here. Yes, I was just saying Maureen Spalick found herself in jail since she last came on the show, but you suffered the same fate. Tell us, if you don't mind, all about your recent rearrest.
Yes, I will. I had to go for bail 3 times a week in Warrington, the main police station, and I did so as usual a week last Wednesday, the 14th of April. And when I turned in, I suddenly realised something was a little bit different to the normal, because suddenly through the door came two CID officers from Grampian, and with a warrant saying, "Are you George Robert Green?" I said, "Yes." "Well, you're under arrest for breaking your bail conditions, and we're going to take you all the way up to Aberdeen now, and you're going to be put into custody." So that was a nice start to the day.
And how many hours was the drive?
6 hours.
And you were handcuffed all the way?
I was handcuffed all the way. I have to say, just at the start, I don't want to make too much of a meal of this, although it could be quite serious. I didn't have my glasses with me, because I just popped in to sign, and they were in my car, and they pushed the document in front of me, and I said, "Well, I can't sign this or any other document, even if I wanted to, because I can't read it. Could you go and get my glasses from the car? Or one of you can go while you've got all my... you're holding me, what are you worried about? You know, go and get them, you know, no point." Anyway, the officers who were, I'll just tell you a little bit more about them in a second, but they went away to ring somebody, some unknown person, don't know who it was, but the unknown person said, must have told them, "No, Green can't have his glasses, bring him up without them," which I understand is a breach of European law over human rights, to deprive someone of sight.
Yeah,
absolutely. So that we will be following that one up.
And speaking of the handcuffs of the whole way, maybe they'd heard me calling you the Truth Ninja.
Right.
And they thought you were actually going to get into them like Jet Li.
No, I wasn't going to do that. No, I was very, very peaceable, as I always am. But one thing I would like to say, because there has been a lot of misconceptions about my treatment by Grampian Police, and we're here to go after the people who have been involved in crime or cover-up, serious crimes, but we are not here to criticise people who behave properly. The two officers who took me up to Aberdeen could not have been more considerate and kind. They were a credit to the police force, in my opinion.
Good.
And I should also say that the officers who dealt with me whilst I was in custody in the Queen Street Aberdeen police station, D.S. Drummond and the rest of the people, were correct at all times. So if any of you got suspicious about ill treatment by the police, glasses apart, they treated me very well, and I don't want anybody criticising Grampian Police. There's some good officers there, and it's not fair they should always be tarred with the brush of perhaps one or two people who commit misdemeanours.
No worries. And Anne, I have to say hello to you, just bring your mic up. Thank you so much for joining me tonight.
Hi.
And this is our fabulous Manchester studio, so yeah. It's nice to have you here. How are you, and how is things?
We're fine. Holly and I are very glad that everyone's helping us, and we want to thank everyone in Scotland and everyone in England and everyone all over the world that is supporting our cause.
and there's about 27,000 people in what has become known now as Holly's Army.
That's
the websites popping up everywhere telling Holly and your own story. Politicians are getting approached up and down the country, but there's a continued media silence. Are you feeling optimistic or pessimistic? Because there are so many positives and negatives at the same time.
Well, I've always been positive. I've kept going with this case for 10 years now, 13 really, since my brother died. And I've always kept a positive attitude. And I knew one day that someone would finally listen. And my goodness, are they listening now?
Excellent. And Holly's here as well, but she's not on a microphone. But do you want to just shout hello to everybody? She's listening. We'll try and get you over there towards the microphone. We're on the webcam tonight as well, folks.
Oh.
And I'll be sending everyone a link out shortly that adds us on MSN so you can see us. Holly, do I say hello to everyone?
Hello, everybody.
There you go. That's Holly Gregg herself in person here live in the studio all night. And we've got loads and loads of guests coming up. But also, haven't spoke to Aime yet. Can I just introduce yourself, Aime? For folks who don't know, just tell us a wee bit about yourself.
Well, first of all, it's Aime. And somebody very recently said to me, quite new to me, a New York firefighter said, so you got a sister called Moon, right? Because it's always easy to remember it, like Aime in the morning. So the way most people remember it. I've been involved in this field of work for a long, long time. I first met David Icke at the end of 93, worked with him from 94, very, very early days. At the time, he was working on a very, very exciting book, which is probably, in terms of looking back at history, one of the most amazing books ever written, in 1995, a book called And the Truth Shall Set You Free. At the time, people wouldn't publish the book. They were terrified because of the things that he was saying inside the book. And, of course, we know today more than anything that what seemed like really outrageous kind of facts or what he was proposing at the time about certain leaders, government people, etc. Well, we look back now and we see that every single thing in that book not only is provable, but we know far, far more now in terms of the really global scale of how much this stuff goes on around the world. But that was the first book that he ever self-published, and I was very privileged. My ex-partner actually gave me the money for that. And that allowed David to have his first opportunity to self-publish. He never looked back from then on in. I've met some incredible people over the years. I've never, ever kind of yet become more astounded as things have gone on. It's just time after time after time. I think some people, when they hear about these facts, think it's just far too fantastic that these things can be happening in the world. It's so real, it's unbelievable. But it's my job to make the information move, to allow people to have the arena where they're allowed to be able to put their point of view over. It's then up to everybody else to decide, once they have the facts, what they make of these things. But now we have the internet and all sorts of, you know, fancy ways to communicate. But in those days, way back then, Tony, we didn't even have mobile phones. But it's marvellous what's happening in the truth movement around the world at the moment. So marvellous stuff.
No worries. Well, thank you all for coming in tonight. And you'll be here until 10 o'clock. So we encourage everyone to get in touch. If you want to add us on MSN, show your support, ask us any questions for myself, for Anne, for Holly, for Robert, for AM, for our guest coming up later in the show, which is Jim Corr, Mark Daly. Send us your questions now, add us on MSN, studio@manchesterradioonline.com. That's studio@manchesterradioonline.com. And if you're on Skype, you can add us as well, all one word, Manchester Radio Online. And the phone number, we're going to hopefully open up the phone line for maybe the last 20 minutes of the show. So if you want to get on the phone, you can give us a call towards the end of the show once I give you the kind of the notice that we're going to open up the phone line. The number is 0161-202-1677. That's 0161-202-1677. All right, then, we're going to talk to John Taylor about the controversial South Aberdeen election debate after this. This is a track that I'm really, really enjoying at the minute. It's the Tony Legend Show on ManchesterRadioOnline.com, 8:15. That was Morgan Heritage with Politicians. All right, then. Let's get our first caller up tonight. His name is John Taylor, and we're going to be discussing the first debate in the Aberdeen South election. So, John Taylor, welcome to the Tony Legend Show.
Hi, Tony.
How you doing, sir?
Very well, thanks.
All right, now, let's just quickly get into this. We've got 10 or 15 minutes before Mark Daly gets in touch with us, all being well. With the general election only a couple of weeks away, you attended the first Aberdeen South political debate recently. Of course, Robert Green is now an official general election candidate in South Aberdeen, standing as part of the Scotland Against Crooked Lawyers party. John, tell us about how you got involved in this campaign, and then tell us all about what happened at the first public debate up there in Aberdeen South.
I've been involved in the campaign since February, when I first heard about Robert's first arrest, and I've done a few things. I've sent out a few emails and looked into a few things, trying to get people interested in Aberdeen, because unfortunately the majority of people in Aberdeen just don't know about this this terrible situation. And I think what happened in respect to the first hustings demonstrated that. We were of the impression that the first hustings were going to be next week, hosted by the BBC, which almost needless to say we've not been invited to. But there was a hustings event on Friday evening at Peter Cooter Church Hall, and we only found out about this quite by accident about 11 o'clock on Friday morning. We certainly weren't invited, and there appeared to be some sort of publicity blackout. The first publicity about this event was in the BBC, and it was announced at 7 minutes to midnight on Thursday night. So they obviously didn't want fringe candidates to know about it, but the main parties, well, in Scotland here as well as Liberal, Labour and Conservative, we've got the wonderful extra choice of Scottish Nationalists. They were all informed, they were all set up, and I think the intention was that it would only be their candidates attending and only their supporters in the audience.
And just tell us about once you heard about the event, how kind of mobilised Holly's army.
We rustled up a few numbers. We weren't quite sure how many we were going to get, because we only had 8 hours to get the people together. But we managed to get, there was 12 of us turned up. They weren't all there at the beginning, but by the end of the evening there was 12 SECL supporters in the audience. And we were talking to a few people at the end about who'd, I think you could say they are now part of Holly's army as well.
No worries. Well, just go through, if you can, kind of paint a picture for us about what happened and how you kind of got in touch with the people that were there, how you approached them and the flyer given out and stuff like that. Just tell us about what happened actually at this debate.
Okay, well, it was due to start at 7:30. So myself and my colleague Adam Tyndall, we turned up early at 7:15. We were asked to speak to the gentleman who was organising it. It was a sort of coalition of various churches that were holding this meeting. So we spoke to the organiser and said, we are representing Scotland Against Crooked Lawyers. You're probably aware that our candidate, Robert Green, is unable to attend, but I think it would be in the interest of democracy if we were allowed up on stage. And this flummoxed him somewhat. He says, well, you're a single-issue party. We're dealing with Westminster issue here. So he obviously wasn't expecting this, but we stood our ground and we asked if he could check with all the candidates if it was okay for us to get up on stage with him. And he came back in a couple of minutes and said that all of the candidates were unanimous that they did not want Scotland Against Crooked Lawyers up on stage with them. So we dug our heels in again and said, look, at the very least, we want you to announce that we are here, we are an official party, and we want the chance to state our manifesto. So, credit to the gentleman, he agreed to that.
Do you think that's kind of discrimination from straight away, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. I think election law is a bit vague in this area, but natural justice and the interest of democracy, you think all candidates standing at an election would A, be informed about the event, and be allowed to take the stage. There's only 7 candidates in the constituency. It's not as if there's 24 or some unmanageable number.
Well, we're joined, obviously, in the studio by Robert Green. Robert, obviously you couldn't be there, could you?
No, I couldn't be there, no, which is obviously very disappointing, and I think is not only assault on the people who suffered, Holly and the other poor children, it's not an assault on me, it's just an assault on democracy, plain and simple. This is sounds something that happened under Hitler or Stalin, where a party who challenged the governing party in Scotland, the Scottish Nationalist Party, actually used the law, the breach of the peace law, in order to get rid of a potentially dangerous candidate. And that is because, obviously, I have sufficient evidence here to cause resignations with the most senior people in the Scottish Nationalist Party. But before I say more about this, one thing I must say is a big thank you to John and the team. I can't let this go, but John and his team have been absolutely heroic in what they're doing. I would never have been able to stand, because obviously they arrested me last week to try and stop me standing, and had it not been for John's wonderful efforts and the rest of the team, other really brave, patriotic Scots, then I wouldn't be here standing as a prospective Member of Parliament for Aberdeen South now. So thank you for everything, John.
Thank you, Robert.
Can I just say as well, Tony, particularly, one of the things that John did was he managed to relay very clearly in a very concise email what took place at the hustings that evening. And being able to convey that information so well had a tremendous effect. It really boosted the confidence and enthusiasm of all of the people involved within this. But last of all, I think perhaps as well to mention, John, that the way in which the 12 of you conducted yourself with great dignity has to be admired. Really reliable and basically just a total credit to Holly and to this work. People do talk if obviously people kick off, you know, and cause trouble or are disruptive, but the feedback has been very, very clear that those people who attended to represent Robert on behalf of Holly conducted themselves with great dignity. Thank you for that.
Thanks, Ian.
All right, then, just tell us about you know, as the night went on, and I think you managed to read out a few statements, and you were giving out flyers and stuff. What kind of reaction did you get?
Well, it's worth making the point, Tony, that we were very concerned we wouldn't be allowed to speak at all. So Adam grabbed the microphone in the middle of the debate and said, "I just want to point out that I'm here from Scotland Against Crooked Lawyers. Our candidate is banned from entering in Aberdeen. We were not told about this event. All the other candidates said they did not want us up in the platform. The organiser promised that we would be allowed to state our manifesto. Can I be assured that we're going to get that chance?" So the organiser was a bit sheepish at this stage, and he said, "Yes, at the end of the debate, you'll be allowed to state your manifesto." So that's what we did. Adam stood up and delivered a very simple manifesto in a very powerful and passionate way. All we're saying is that we've got a very, very simple manifesto. We're just looking for justice for Holly. We're looking for her allegations she has made to be properly investigated. And we're also looking for an investigation into the death of her uncle, Roy. And we also mentioned about some of the efforts that's been made to block the SECL campaign and the abysmal performance of Anne Begg and basically ignoring the numerous emails and letters she's received about this issue. Anne Begg is the MP for Aberdeen South, which is the constituency where the alleged incidents took place. So the audience were left in no doubt what her opinion of Anne Begg was.
All right, obviously we've got Holly and Anne in the studio. Anne wants to come in with something, Anne?
Yeah, I would just like to thank you very much on behalf of myself and of Holly for all your efforts that you're doing up there.
Thanks.
You're just a diamond, honestly. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
And we got a message there on MSN. It's from John. He says, "If we don't believe in freedom of speech for the people we despise the most, then we don't believe in it at all." And that's very wise words there, John, and I appreciate that. And everyone else that's getting in touch here on MSN, send us all your questions. And even your comments, if you've got anything you'd like to comment, and I always love reading everything out from you. So just add us now, studio@manchesterradioonline.com. All right then, John, just finishing up the last couple of minutes, is there anything else you want to tell us about the night?
The panel were looking very uncomfortable at this stage, but it got worse for them. Adam passed the microphone to one of our colleagues who's got personal experience of, in his family, a situation with similarities to what Holly's going through. So when he gave his personal story, it was very powerful. And at the end of the meeting, we handed out leaflets, and we took the chance of asking very politely questions of all the candidates. Now, the Tory candidate made a very sharp exit. The SNP candidate was clearly panicked and said, "SNP are not going to speak about this." Anne Begg was... she was caught out. She failed to answer questions about why she hadn't responded to emails. She said this is a police matter. Then it was explained about the potential involvement of the police. She really didn't have an answer. We've got that videoed, and it will be very embarrassing for her. And for the Liberal candidate left the building, he admittedly, I thought, performed quite well in the controlled environment of the debate. But when he left the building, he was like a, when we asked him a question about the Holy Greg case, he was like a rabbit caught in car headlights. We tried to give him one of our leaflets. He recoiled in horror. He said he was very busy, too busy to look into it.
Well,
that left a very poor impression of him, because it was mainly Anne Begg with issues with, and the SNP as a whole. Liberals are not particularly involved in this cover-up, but their candidate did himself no credit whatsoever.
And all in all, the election's only in a couple of weeks' time. How do you see this turning out?
Well, we've just got to get the message out. I mean, there's basically a media blackout. Both Anne Begg and John Slay, the Liberal candidate, are on Twitter, and they both tweeted yesterday, and both of them appear to have forgotten that there was a hustings the night before. So I think the fact that all of the media is just ignoring what happened on Friday night tells its own story. So we can't rely on the mainstream media. We've just got to get the word out in the streets. So luckily the number of people in Aberdeen is growing, and they're just telling their friends and neighbours, and the word is getting out, and it we just can't keep the lid on this.
Well, Robert, is there any comments you would like to make before we start with John?
Sure. Well, there are. Again, just thanking John very much for his contribution tonight, and he's been absolutely wonderful. But I think here I understand that it's a matter of parliamentary history. I'm the very first candidate in British parliamentary history who is not allowed to appear in the city in front of the constituency who wishes to vote for him, and I'm not allowed to address them on the issues in which I want to talk to them about. This has to be sorted out once and for all. It's not against, not just me, this ridiculous law in Scotland, which is used as a weapon by the governing party there. Something has to be done about this for the future. This can never be allowed to happen again.
It's highly undemocratic, isn't it?
Without any question at all.
I mean, even nothing to do with Holly or Anne or Roy.
Absolutely not.
It's just on this one issue.
Absolutely.
It's very undemocratic.
It means if a candidate comes forward in Scotland with saying something which the governing party does not like, and it doesn't matter what it is, it means that the governing party can use this very loose breach of the peace rule in Scotland to effectively eliminate that candidate from a democratic election. It's not just an attack on the candidates, it's an attack on the democracy, it's an attack on the voters who are being disenfranchised because the bullying tactics of abusing the Scottish law. They're not using the law, they're abusing it.
Indeed. Anne, would you like to come in with something else?
There is a section 8 in the law in Scotland that actually gives you the privilege that if you're trying to unravel a case or anything, you are allowed to go out on the street with a placard if you're trying to stop a crime. So that there is a provision within the Scottish law for that.
Yes, I think it's highly likely that my arrests on both occasions have been highly unlawful, and we'll be looking into that very closely.
And of course the general election is only a couple of weeks away. How are you feeling about that, Robert?
Well, I'm feeling as confident as one can be when one doesn't, not in the city, but I have to say the wonderful support we're getting all over the place is terrific. Obviously John and the team are magnificent. We have the two gentlemen in Ireland I do want to talk about. They'll be talked about a little later in the show, but the names are Kevin Flanagan and John Deegan. I have to say these men are true gentlemen. If people don't know, and the people in Aberdeen probably won't know, because nobody will tell them, but those two gentlemen have a 48-hour vigil, a fast, in O'Connell Street, outside the General Post Office in Dublin, from Friday, 6 o'clock, until 6 o'clock tonight. And they're doing that for Holly and all the poor children of Aberdeen. It's about time the people in Aberdeen, or I'm not saying about time because they don't know, but I want to get that message to the people of Aberdeen. This is what people outside your country are doing for the children of Aberdeen. And isn't it ironic that people in China, Pakistan, India know more about this story than the people who actually live in the city where it's all happened and is happening?
Tommy on the MSN says, forget about mainstream media, the people have the new and true media. And he goes on to say that this is an attack to the very heart of truth and justice. Indeed it is. Thank you very much for that, Tommy. Keep them coming on the MSN, studio@manchesterradioonline.com. John Taylor, thank you so much for your hard work, and thank you so much for coming on the show tonight.
Thanks, Tony. Looking forward to hearing the rest of the show.
No problem, sir.
All the best.
All right. There it goes, folks. All right, then. We're going to have, hopefully, Mark Daly on the line in a couple of minutes' time. But right now, I'm going to go with a track. I'm going to go with this from Junior Kelly. This is Corruption.
Hi, Tony. How you doing? Well, yeah, thanks for having me on the show. I guess by way of an opening statement, I'd just like to say that I didn't have any intention of coming on a programme like this to justify my actions or the BBC's actions. I have no wish to compound what is already an extremely tragic and very sad situation. However, over the weeks and months, I've, you know, been the victim of a sustained barrage of abuse about mine and the BBC's decision to drop this story, which we did. There's no question about it. We did look at this story and we did drop it. So tonight I've come onto the programme to explain my reasons for doing that. I do, and you know, there are some things that I'm going to say tonight which probably won't be that easy for some of the people in the studio to hear, but I feel that my hand has been forced, and I just hope that you, Tony, give me a fair hearing. And I'm very pleased that Mr. Green is on the programme as well to join in the debate.
No worries. Well, let's just start at the beginning, if that's all right. How did you first hear of Holly Gregg?
Well, the story has passed to me, and I'll summarise very quickly how my involvement in this story began. I spoke to Robert Green, and I spoke to Anne, and I had some brief conversations over a few days. I asked for a selection of paperwork to be sent to me. I was told that there was a massive bundle of paperwork, which is always good for guys like me. So I asked for this to be sent to me, and it was sent. And on the face of it, there was an extremely powerful story. What you had was a Down syndrome girl making very serious allegations. Now, at this time, we were looking to do a programme about justice and how people with learning disabilities have problems accessing justice for precisely the kinds of reasons that you people are campaigning, that they're not viewed as credible witnesses. This is an extremely important issue, and one which the BBC thought that we would have a look at. What Holly would have been was probably our chief case study. So, on the basis of the evidence which we had, it looked like there was some strong grounds to support Holly's allegation that she'd been abused by somebody in her family. That was supported by a letter from a senior police officer and the fact that she had received compensation despite no charges being brought. So on that basis alone, there was a very strong programme there. There were some other allegations about a wider paedophile ring. Now, I've been a journalist for a lot of years. I've done programmes about many things. Paedophiles is one of them. I did a programme called Britain's Most Wanted Paedophiles. I chased 5 on-the-run paedophiles around Europe for months until they were finally back in police custody. I know quite a lot about the subject, and I know that these things do happen, and I know they happen in Britain, and I know that sometimes they happen under our noses. So I was prepared to believe that this, you know, these allegations could have some grounds. But on the basis of the initial allegations about the initial abuse carried out by somebody in her family, those allegations looked like they stood up. I had some opening conversations with a lawyer about whether or not I would have enough evidence to confront this person, and it looked like I probably did. And on that basis, I was given a provisional commission to make 2 programmes, a TV half-hour for Scotland and a radio half-hour for Scotland. You must understand that journalists look into dozens and dozens of stories every year. Some make it, most don't. Some get commissioned and some get dropped midway through a commission because maybe the story isn't there or it's not what they thought or other things come up. You know, that's just part of television. So what we then did, and you know, Robert, if you've read the email out on this very programme, Tony, so I'm not debating never had done about the fact that there was a provisional commission to make a programme on this case. So what next happened is I and my team travelled down to see Anne and Holly. Robert Green was also there. And we spent 4 or 5 hours talking to the family, who, as I said at the time, I liked very much and sympathised with very much. We took away all the paperwork that we'd asked for. But very, very quickly, in fact, almost as soon as we came out of the house, we knew that there were problems. But, you know, within a week or two, we came to the conclusion that this was not a story that we could proceed with. We knew that the vast majority of these allegations were unprovable, and we were not in a position to pick and choose which allegations we wanted to believe, so we dropped the story. Now, and Anne was informed, as was Robert. Now, just before you come back with questions, as I'm sure you've got a few, I took the precaution when I phoned up Anne to when I was telling her about this about my reasons for dropping the story. I took the precaution of secretly recording, not secretly, but recording the conversation for note-taking purposes. I've also recorded the conversation with Robert Green for note-taking purposes. And BBC, you can do that, but you're not allowed to broadcast that material. It's just to protect you, for example, if a case comes to court or something like that. Now, as you know, both Anne and Robert have alleged that I told them that I had to drop this story because I was forced to by my bosses, because of pressure from the government, pressure from a legal firm called Levy & McRae, and that I was in fear for my job, therefore I had to drop the story. Now, that conversation did not take place. Those words were not spoken, and I'm afraid that I have the recorded evidence to prove it. However, that didn't stop Robert and I say that, going around the country, going on various satellite television channels, online radio stations, and writing that, in fact, I had been forced to drop this story, that I was a journalistic coward, and I was in fear for my job. Now, I'm afraid it just isn't true, because I'm not in the business of shying away from big stories. Big stories are what I do. I've taken on some of the biggest institutions in the country, government, police. I do investigate paedophile stories. If I thought I could run this one, I would have done. And the suggestion that I or the BBC would have walked away from a story because it was too big or we were too scared, it's fanciful. It just is. It's misguided and insulting. If this story was what I was told it was, I would have been all over it, and I'm afraid the evidence did not support it. Now, I've got many, many other things that I want to say, but I want to give you or Robert the chance to come in and ask me anything.
Well, I'd just like to go, I've got an email here from Marcus Ryder. Now, Marcus is your editor, is this correct?
That's true.
Now, I've got a letter here, it's to Mr. Green, that's Robert Green, it's from Marcus Ryder. Now, he says in the middle of this, when Mark Daly told Anne that he could lose his job if he were to broadcast such a story, the clear meaning behind this was that it would be careless and unprofessional to broadcast allegations which could not be proven.
Yeah.
Careless and unprofessional workers rarely keep their jobs, and I understand that.
That's exactly what I said. At the end of my conversation, I said, look, if I was a kind of journalist that went around broadcasting allegations which I knew were unprovable, which I knew I could never find the evidence to back it up, then, you know, journalists like that don't stay journalists for very long. Now, somehow, in that explanation, it's gone from that to me being in fear for my job because I'm being pressurised by my boss, the government, and Levy & McRae. Now, those two things don't just tie up, Tony. Now, I ask you, Tony, as a journalist, which you told me you are, does it ring true to you that a journalist who's done the kind of work I've done would suddenly decide to walk away from a story because he was scared? If I'd been told by the BBC or the government that I must drop this story or I would lose my job, the first thing I would do would be to resign and to go freelance and tell the story myself. Now, does it really ring true to you, Tony? Does it?
Well, if this was the BBC maybe 20 years ago, I would take that on, but for me, the BBC has lost a lot of credibility and respect.
Listen, I'm not here to defend the BBC. BBC has its problems, it does, but I'm here to talk to you tonight about my role in this, and I'm asking you, Tony, do you really think that rings true?
Well, listen, I'll let Robert come in, because he wants to say something to you there. Robert, go ahead.
Yes, I do, Mark. Now, Mark...
Hello, Robert.
Hello, Mark. Now, I may be, he got a little old-fashioned, but I believe in chivalry. It is not only that you refuse to do the story that distresses me enormously, and we can talk about that. I'm not going to talk about it unless you give me assurance on this. You were not only a situation where you did not run the story, but you insulted a lady, and that lady happens to be my client, Anne Gregg. You made serious aspersions in writing about her mental state. They were heartless, cruel, they were groundless, and moreover, you knew they were groundless. And unless I get an unconditional apology to you right now, Anne is here at the studio, I will not talk to you any more about this.
Right, okay. Well, but to be honest, I'm surprised you've actually come on the programme tonight to speak to me. And I think it would be rather cowardly of you if you were to suddenly hang or suddenly walk out of the studio and not take any further part in the debate. Now, what I will say about what you just said is that Anne passed me medical details about her. Now, if you think that I'm going to talk about somebody's personal medical details on air, I'm just not going to do it. What I will do is this, is from the notes, from the evidence, from the documents that I was given by Anne, it was very clear to me, in my opinion, that had I to rely on Anne in a court defending allegations I had made about somebody, a paedophile, a relative of Holly's, a sheriff, that I would not be able to rely on her in court. That was the conclusion I reached. It was a truthful conclusion I reached. That was what I believed, and that was what I said to Anne in a private letter, Robert. And I have no wish to talk about and mental health on air, with hundreds or thousands of people listening. Okay? Now, if you still don't wish to discuss these issues further with me...
Hang on a second.
Okay, Anne.
Right. This is my, medical things that we're speaking about here. And I have got absolutely nothing to hide.
Okay, I'll be happy to talk to you about this if you like.
Okay.
On a personal note.
The documents that I gave you, the documents that I gave you, proved that this was a paper chase, right? Not even 3 months after I was sectioned, the whole case was dropped. Everything.
Okay, Anne.
And this is now how many years down the line, right? So don't you say that you had this thing about me, because that is really highly insulting.
I'm sorry that you took it as insulting, Anne. I was giving you a genuine appraisal of my opinion of the situation. However, Anne, there are many, many more reasons why I was unable to continue with this story. If Robert agrees, and if you agree, I will talk to you about that conclusion that I reached at some point, and I'll be happy to. But I would like to move on to the many, many other reasons which meant that this is not a story that I, or the BBC, or for that matter, any other reputable news organisation can ever publish.
Mark, I would just like to say to you, are you medically qualified?
As I said to you, it was my opinion.
Your opinion.
But
you're not medically qualified, are you?
No, and I don't claim to be. But it was my opinion that had I to rely on you in court, then I thought that your credibility would have been impaired. Okay,
think I would have done in court?
What do you mean? It's not about what you would have said in court, Anne. That's not what it was about. And I was at great pains to explain to you and to Robert the reasons behind my decision related to the documents that you passed me.
All right, can I just come in for a second, folks? Now, Mark, I respect that this is tension all round and all angles here, but I would like to move on a second, because at the end of the day, it's not about Mark Daly, it's not about the BBC, it's not about censorship or any who said what. The bottom line is that we both agree that Holly was abused by her dad, and so I would like to focus on that.
I'm not saying anything like that. But what I'm saying to you is that I think there was probably some strong evidence that Holly was abused. Yes.
Yeah. Well,
I'm not saying.
Mark, as far as I'm concerned, I could be the loopiest person on this planet. And that does not detract from the fact that my daughter was abused.
It does not, Anne. It does not. Absolutely not.
Well,
can I just come in?
Come in, yes.
A minute, please.
Yes.
Robert, there are various things online. You said things online, you said things to radio stations, to anyone who would listen, really. You've named this paedophile ring. You have, at the bottom of everything that you've written, you've said, you know, all these names are known to me as a result of my extensive investigations, and I believe them to be true. So, you've investigated all of these allegations, Robert, is that right?
Mark, I want an unconditional apology to Anne right now. I've just told you I'm not talking to you again until you behave like a gentleman. This is you and me, man to man. Have the guts to apologise for your disgusting remarks about Anne's mental state that have no bearing on the case anyway, and you knew to be false.
Tony, can I just suggest to you that I don't think Robert is going to engage in anything to do with me tonight, because he knows that what I've got to say is going to be a slightly problematic for him. So if you can just try and mediate this situation, Tony, because what I will do is say that I'm very sorry that Anne was offended by comments that I made. I am sorry about that, but there's nothing I can do about the fact that that was my opinion. I'm sorry I was offended by that. But Robert, if you can please move on and just answer the question.
Well, I'd just like to say, I mean, obviously, I'm not a medical expert either, but after meeting Anne for even 5 minutes, I could realise that she's very articulate and very well-spoken and not in any way crazy. And the way I perceived this when she was sectioned, that looked to me like just trying to discredit her, and it seems to have worked.
OK, well, if we can agree to move on, Tony, please.
All right. All right, well, Robert, are you happy to move on?
Robert, would you answer the question, please?
Well, no, is that an unconditional apology to Anne? Will you withdraw everything you said and admit that what you said was groundless? It was based on lies, and you knew it to be false. I want you to say that on air now.
No, I'm sorry,
You're not getting off the hook that easily. You lied.
I'm sorry, I can't say that, Robert.
Well,
Robert,
in that case, I have nothing more to say to you, Mark. That's
okay,
the
then.
End as far as
okay.
I'm concerned.
Tony,
you are not a gentleman.
Okay,
you are a coward.
Tony, why don't you Tony, can you come back in here and just try and take control of the situation, please?
All right, well, listen, we'll move on, Mark. What else would you like to say here, Ryan? Because I know that you want to see this as the...
Tony, I've had months of this without ever being asked to give my side of the story. Even on this programme, Tony, not once was I asked to come on and put my side of the story. I wasn't asked for a right reply. I had to ask to come on this programme. Okay? So, if you don't mind, I'd like to say my piece.
Yep, that's what. Go ahead, you have the floor.
Now, Graham, Robert, you say that you're an investigator. You say that all these allegations have been investigated and are known to you to be true. Now, let's start at the sheriff. Now, this sheriff, who's one of the ringleaders of this ring, the sheriff's sister is also involved, and the sheriff's brother-in-law. Am I right?
Yep, continue that.
Robert, am I right?
He was busy writing. Sorry, we're caught up in this. You said something there, Mark, about the...
Yes, you just said another untruth, Mark. You just... as you well know, I emailed you about the public meeting that was held on the 3rd of October at the Quaker Hall in Edinburgh.
What's that got to do with this?
It's got everything to do, because you said you weren't invited to give your part side of the story. I invited you... I invited you to that meeting. I was going to give you a platform in front of the public, and you didn't turn... You got an email from me, I can assure you.
If I have, Robert, then...
But there was your chance. You had a platform. No, because you had the chance to speak. You're only on the now because you're getting your collar felt, and you're probably under orders from somebody.
No, actually,
and I'm not going to let you off the hook.
Tony, can you mediate this problem?
Yes, I'm trying to, yes. Go ahead.
Tony, now, as part of the paedophile ring, the ringleader is the sheriff. He's also involved with his sister and his sister's wife. Now, Robert, being an investigator, a truth ninja, as he's been called, will, of course, have made sure that these relationships exist. The truth, Tony, is that this sheriff has no sister, therefore has no brother-in-law, okay? So here are three of the main people in this paedophile ring, and two of them don't exist, okay? Now, shall I move on?
Yeah, just like that. Anne, would you like to say anything on that? Or?
Well, that's not true at all.
Well, these things are very easily checkable through the register of birth, death and marriages, and I urge Robert to maybe have a look at that. Now, next.
I think you must have the wrong sheriff there.
Sorry,
Sorry, say that again there, Alan.
I think you must have got the wrong sheriff.
No, I don't have a wrong sheriff, Anne, I'm afraid. I don't. Now, if I can just continue.
Yeah, continue.
It's been said, well, firstly, the allegations were made at first in 2000, and many of the allegations were said to have, some of the abuse was said to have taken place in the sheriff's house in Aberdeen. This sheriff... Well, I've seen some of the allegations, and it is true.
That's not true. That's not what we told
you. He didn't live in Aberdeen until 2000. He didn't live in Aberdeen until 2000. He only moved there in 2000. These are the kind of things...
We never said his house at all. We never mentioned his house at all.
These are the kind of things that investigators investigate to see whether or not they can proceed with a story. Now, can I move
that
on?
That was never said at all. It
okay.
was his house.
Okay, well, I think you have said that. That allegation has been made, Anne.
Holly's here. Do you want to speak to Holly and ask her?
No, I don't. Anne.
No, I
think that's inappropriate.
No, I didn't think you would.
We never said it was the sheriff's house.
Can I go on, please?
At that time. So I'm afraid Robert, this is another lot of nonsense you're coming out with.
You know the seven other children that you've named?
Yes.
Two of them weren't born at the time of these allegations.
I think you're absolutely wrong there, Mark.
Have you spoken to any of these people?
I'm not making any comments.
Have you spoken to any of the people that you've said are part of this paedophile ring? Have you spoken to any of the other victims that you've named?
These children that you are speaking about are all adults now.
Sorry?
These children that you are speaking about are all adults.
No, they're not. Two of them are 10 years old, and they're not born at the time of the
allegations. They are all adults.
Shall I move on?
Yeah, continue if you want, yeah.
Now, it's been said that your son was, he faced a charge for lewd and libidinous behaviour, I think, with some sort of flashing offence. But the sheriff in question helped him to get off with it. Okay, I don't think that's in dispute at all.
No, that's not what I said at all.
And that his business card was found.
That's correct.
Now, the business card...
No, it wasn't
a lawyer.
Business card for... it was for a lawyer, not a sheriff.
Okay, but the allegation, as I was told, was the lawyer is the same as the sheriff. And that was the sheriff who helped him get off. But in fact, he didn't get off. He was convicted of that offence.
Well, Mark, if I could just come in for a minute. Like, obviously... We're getting into the ins and outs here, which
is... Yes, but Tony, it's important because I'm telling you the reasons that a story like this can't be published or broadcast, because when it comes to it, when you look at the allegations, when you look at the evidence, I'm afraid that many of the allegations just don't stand up.
But, I mean, just for a minute, maybe you've called me naive for thinking this before, but surely a court of law would be the place to have these sort of discussions and not on the Tony Legend Show.
Well,
a court of law would be a much more ideal place, you know, hands on the Bible and swear on
Tony, you've got a great point there. And the point here is that the one allegation that had any legs, the one allegation that should have been brought in front of a court, in front of a judge, has been lost in a deluge of these other allegations, which I'm afraid don't stand up. Now, if Robert, this lead investigator, had taken the time to perhaps go and speak to any of the other victims that he's named, to any of the people that he's accused of being a paedophile, he might have been able to get a little bit closer to the truth himself. But, two of these alleged victims were not born at the time. Two of them were in their late teens, almost in their 20s. Does that ring true?
That's not true at all.
What kind of investigation have you done, Robert?
That is not true at all.
Two of the people have said that they've only met Holly once or twice. Now, these are all things that are very easily checkable. None of these things has Robert done. None of them. These are the types of things that an investigator does. And Robert has done none of them. And these are the reasons, I'm afraid, Tony, Anne, these are the reasons why the BBC cannot broadcast a story like this. Because the allegations, the wider allegations, I'm afraid, do not stand up. And the one allegation that did could possibly have stood up has been lost amongst the rest of them.
I'm going to give you one...
And on whose conscience will that be, Robert?
I think yours was much say thanks, Mark. But one thing I will do, and I might make one concession to you and the BBC, the three documents came forward after the BBC had dropped the story. And to be fair to you, I think had you got those documents, I think even the BBC would have stood up to whoever's threatening them. The three documents...
No,
I'm going to tell you what the documents are. Then you can perhaps have a think about it and perhaps come back and tell us if you think that you would have continued with the story had you had access to these documents.
Okay.
First, the document from Elisha Angelini claims she had no connection with the case whatsoever. In fact, as you well know, because you've seen the documents, we have a letter from from Brian Adam, MSP, dated the 27th of October, 2000, writing directly to Mrs. Angelini to ask her how she was getting on with the case. We've also got a document here. I'm telling you about documents we have got now.
What does that prove?
It proves that the Lord Advocate was lying about her.
It proves the Lord Advocate's office may have mislaid a letter.
Mark, there is a letter here that you saw because it was in the documents. You saw this letter. It's dated the 12th of July, 2001. It's from the Procurator Fiscal's office, headed Elisha Angelini on the top of it, and she's writing here to Anne Solicitor at the time, Yvonne McKenna, actually discussing the case. And this is the case that Mrs. Angelini claimed to have no knowledge of or no involvement in.
Well,
you had that document.
I'm afraid that's a bit thin, I'm afraid, a journalist as you claim to be.
Why
don't you tell me what the next document is?
I think you're a weak journalist because you knew the Lord Advocate had been lying, but you didn't want to take them on.
Why don't you tell me what the next document is, Robert?
And also, the other document that we had as well, you didn't have, and I have to say again, I think the BBC might even have looked at it slightly differently, was the autopsy we finally got hold of on the death of Roy Grell, and the medical records of Holly, which I'm empowered to talk about now, which confirmed that Dr. Carter examined Holly in 1990 and found that she had a sexually transmitted disease.
Sure.
These are the kind of people that the Scottish establishment are trying to cover up for.
I've said several times tonight already that I think that there are strong grounds for backing up the suggestion that Holly was abused, probably by someone, with access to her. Yes, that is not in dispute as far as I'm concerned, Robert, and never has been. Let's talk about the autopsy. Now, the autopsy, for guest listeners who don't know, this is Anne's brother. Now, Anne's brother allegedly killed himself, and I think Robert now insists that, it's suggested by Robert and the campaign team that this was murder because the brother had, Mr. Gregg, had seen Holly being abused. Now, what I've managed to find out, Robert, and I don't know whether you, as your role as a senior investigator in this case, whether you did, but 2 days before Mr. Gregg was found dead, he had been suspended from his job for financial irregularities. Okay? And he was then...
Can I just butt in here?
Sure, Anne. Sure.
That he was not... He was suspended, but he'd already spoken to his union leader about it, and it was a minor thing. He had to go down to Glasgow to speak to them. It was a stock take problem.
Yeah,
right?
He's suspended on suspicion of stealing money. That's what he was suspended for. So my brother took his life because of that.
Is that what you're trying to say?
Sorry.
So who gave him the fractured skull, the broken sternum,
and
the broken ribs?
Well, can I just come to that? He didn't have a fractured skull. He had some damage to his head, yes, but not a fractured skull. Now, what happened, as far as I understand, is that he affixed a pipe to the exhaust and attempted to kill himself. And something went wrong and the car went on fire. There were two people passing, dragged him out of the car and attempted to revive him. Now, the injuries that you talked about, Anne, a broken sternum, a broken ribs, these are all injuries which are consistent with CPR. Now, does anybody... anyone on this panel ever done first aid?
Not at all.
Has anyone ever done first aid
we
on this panel?
We have had experts look at the autopsy.
Anybody
right.
who's done first aid will tell you.
You are not medically qualified to say anything about my brother's autopsy because you are not medically qualified. Now, we have had experts look at my brother's autopsy, right?
Okay. I'm just telling you that this, again, is not something that would stand up as far as a journalist is concerned for a...
So you're trying to tell me that someone from the ambulance service knocked my brother's, you know, fractured my brother's skull?
Well, I'm led to believe that there was no fracture in his skull. There was damage to, there was damage, but there's no fracture of skull. And again, it was in the back of the head, and it was consistent with injuries for delivering CPR.
All right, listen, we're coming
up.
we're almost out of time, folks. Anything else, Mark, you'd like to say?
I would actually. I don't know whether what I've said tonight will make any difference to this campaign or to what they think about the BBC. What is interesting is that Robert has refused to give his permission for the secretly recorded conversations to be broadcast. Now, I wonder what his thinking behind that is. But the one thing I would say, and Anne's obviously getting hostile against me now, and I can understand why, but the one thing I would say here is that this case, I can't ever see this case getting to court unless some new evidence comes forward. But like I said before, the one allegation that did hold water has been washed in a deluge of these other slightly fantastical allegations. And I just wonder that when the fever and the emotion dies from this campaign, when no success is attained, when no newspaper will publish, that when the steam eventually runs out, who's going to be looking after, or who's going to be looking out for Anne and Holly then? Will Robert Greene still be? Tony Legend? David Icke?
There's no question. Woman, for God's sake. Yeah?
There's no question about that, Mark. I should be here right to the end, and I don't agree with your analysis of that. And one other thing I would like to mention to you as well is that the opposition, the solicitors representing the sheriff, who I'm not going to name right now, but representing him in this case, have already accepted that Roy Gregg was murdered. That is the other side of accepting the
Robert, that's just not true.
Oh, it is. We've got it. We've got the
Robert,
document.
Robert, you
it's
you are,
the document
you are
in the public domain. You
Robert,
can look at it.
Robert, you... Truth Ninja, I don't think that you would know the truth if it was karate chopped across your neck, Robert.
I wish you good luck
in your campaign for Parliament, okay? And I think that... I hope that some of the things that have been said by the more sensible people listening to this programme will be taken on board and considered properly before people start turning up demonstrating outside organisations, before people start making allegations, the most serious allegation anybody can make about someone, to call them a paedophile, people should have a pause and really genuinely think about what it is that you're doing here, Robert, about the seriousness of what you've done. What you've done is an affront to free speech. It's an affront to it. It's not a demonstration of it. It's an affront to it, and it's disgraceful, and you'll have to live with that.
Mark, I have no trouble in living with myself over this. It's
Tony,
the cowards,
thanks
it's
very
the
much for giving
me
my time.
Cover, who have to worry, and that includes you.
No worries. Mark, I do appreciate you coming on. You've done a good job of giving your side of the story. I understand it. Obviously, it's a hot topic, but the bottom line is that, as we can all agree, that Dennis Mackey has a lot to answer for. He's still free. He's not hiding. He's a free man, so maybe we should go and door knock him or doorstep him, as you would put it, and see what he has to say on the matter. But I do appreciate your time. You've been a good guest, and thank you very much for giving us your time and coming on the show tonight.
All the best, Tony.
All right, no worries. Thank you very much. There goes, folks. Mark Daly. All right, then. We're going to go to a track. And hopefully come straight in with Jim Corr from The Corrs. Looking forward to that. Stick around. Unbelievable. That's Coco T with New World Order. All right, then. It's my pleasure to introduce now to the show an all-round top bloke, someone who has sold hundreds of thousands, if not millions of albums, and he is now busy fighting the New World Order. Lots of respect on every front. Jim Corr, welcome to the Tony Legend Show.
Tony, how you doing? It's great to talk to you.
No worries, now. Thank you very much for coming on the show tonight. It's it's just a pleasure to talk to you, and I know you've got so many different things on your plate. I have so much I want to say to you, but we'll just take it slowly. We'll probably the best thing to do is just ask you, first of all, how you woke up to the New World Order and everything that comes with it.
Sure. It was about 4 years ago when I properly started to study 9/11. I think somebody might have sent me a video clip or a photograph which was taken in the immediate aftermath of when the Pentagon was hit. And certainly there was no visual imprint whatsoever in the wall of the steel and titanium engines with the vertically stabilizer. And it just didn't look like a plane had hit it. It looked like a missile had hit it. And then I started investigating more into that, discovered that the pilot that allegedly piloted that plane, a guy called Hani Hanwar, he got only rudimentary piloting skills. I mean, he couldn't land or take off a plane. And the maneuver that was made allegedly by that plane could not have been made by a crack military pilot. So that kind of got me started. And I mean, once you get into this, in particular studying 9/11, the anomalies, the inconsistencies run into their thousands, you know.
Indeed. And yeah, I think if I'm not mistaken, you're a pilot yourself, so you kind of know about a thing or two about flying a plane. Is that true?
Yeah, I've got a private pilot's license, yes. And I certainly, you know, there was questions that I was able to answer myself, that I knew that just certainly that there were things that we were expected to believe that were coming from official government stories that could just insult the intelligence of a child. But I think that with the latest revelations in relation to 9/11, with the discovery by a group of eminent scientists of the nanothermite, a high-energy pyrotechnic explosive being found in the dust from the World Trade Center, which gives explanation to the obvious when we look at a controlled demolition of those twin towers. So it's a massive lie, a big lie. And, basically the purpose of 9/11, why it was carried out by the intelligence services on behalf of the global elite was in part to succor the American people and their coalition partners into getting behind another illegal, unjust war, because war is extremely profitable to a select few psychopathic megalomaniacs and facilitates depopulation.
It's a bit like the modern-day Gulf of Tonkin, where it's a false flag event, and then sooner, but out of nothing, you've got a full-blown, pointless and illegal war.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, and of course, the aim being as well to dominate the natural resources, the oil, and of course the opium in Afghanistan. You know, and if in Afghanistan now, the poppy growth is at several times the record of what it was at pre-Taliban days. So, you know, that's what we're getting into. You know, when you look at what are the three most lucrative industries on the planet and the world today, you've got arms, and you've got oil, and you've got drugs. So, I mean, those three then are taken care of very nicely by Iraq and Afghanistan. So there you have the motive.
Indeed. And you've set up your own website, of course, jimcore.com. It's so full of just absolutely powerful information. When did you decide to set up your website to raise awareness of these serious issues, which are being so clearly ignored by the mainstream media?
Well, that was the reason exactly that I've felt for a long time that there's been an information vacuum in the mainstream media that needs to be filled. And I suppose I needed to have some sort of an outlet for expression of my own views, because I mean, what I was discovering was with my research was just so disturbing. And you know, all I could do was tell as many people as I could about it. And I thought, well, why don't I put it together a website so that I can get this out further? And that's what I've been doing. And thankfully, it's getting an awful lot of hits, and so the information is getting out there. And I've set it up in such a way that it's with the information in relation to false flag terrorism and counterintelligence program that it can hopefully be understood by, you know, a large portion of the masses. So that's what I'm trying to do. And I'm staying away from various different aspects of the research, the things that I've come to believe and know myself. I steer away from them purposely on the website, because some of the stuff, as you know, Tony, is just so unbelievable. You would dilute the credibility in relation to information that you're trying to push that can be believed by the general public.
Indeed. Now, of all the issues out there, from the false flag terror, you've got 7/7 under that umbrella, 9/11, Oklahoma City, and even World Trade Center 93. Then you've got all the different scams, which is financially looting our countries, bank bailouts, swine flu scamming. Of all the issues out there, which one really gets you upset and worked up the most?
Well, you know, the very fact that the shadow government could sacrifice 3,000 of their own people in 9/11 is horrendous enough. But when you deeply get into studying this, what really obsessed me at most is the ritual abuse, is the satanic ritual abuse and the satanic ritual sacrifice that people are reporting is going on. Pretty prevalent now, a lot more than a lot of people realise.
And of course we're joined in the studio by AM, Robert Green, Holly Gregg and Anne Gregg. So first of all, everyone just shout out hello to Jim there.
Hello
Jim.
Hello, it is great Holly. To talk to you.
Hello.
Hi Holly, hi Anne.
Hi.
And Robert, great to talk
hello,
to
Jim.
You again.
Hi Jim, it's AM. I wanted to ask you, the subject that you've just talked about that's the most appalling, which is the satanic ritual abuse. I first came across this in 96 via the work that David did with a woman called Cathy O'Brien.
Yes.
And Cathy O'Brien's story and testimony is very well known nowadays because we have the internet and so on. But the thing that got me similarly was the scale and the highly, highly organised scale of this ritual child abuse. I also wanted to ask you, Jim, you know, you've made a very clear commitment now, and I admire you for that. You've kind of said, no, this is what I'm going to do, etc. How have other people, some of them around you who are close to you, received your decision to do it? Have some people been very frightened for you or worried for you? Has anyone thought you're a bit mad or anything like that? Have you had to go through those experiences of people around you starting to think that you're losing it a bit, when you know you're actually onto the right thing, you're onto the truth more than anything, and the evidence shows itself more?
Yeah, it's a hard road, Dan, as you know yourself, but it's a road that I had no choice but to take.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you start discovering what is really going on in the world behind the scenes, you know, behind the movie that is presented to us on the television set, I couldn't anyway. I had to speak out. I had to play my small part.
Yeah.
That's what I'm doing. I'm playing my small part, like a relay, relaying all this information to people. People can take it or leave it.
Yeah.
I do find that that most people on the ground, grassroots, are getting this, particularly getting it about 9/11, getting it about 7/7, particularly in Ireland, having had our fair share of troubles here. And the satanic ritual abuse, that, you know, I I've kind of been only, I've only started to research this myself, and it's horrific. What I do is I go to people that do know about this, like the likes of Henry Macca, David Icke, of course, who's done brilliant research, and I haven't read Transformation of America by Cathy O'Brien, but everybody should read that book.
Yeah.
I intend to read it.
It's harrowing.
Sorry?
It's a harrowing, harrowing testament,
harrowing.
But it's very true, and it's
harrowing.
It changed my life. It literally was the thing that, for me, made me dedicate the rest of the time I'm on this planet to allowing those children who either have suffered or were going to continue to suffer, that I would literally dedicate everything that I have to speak up for them and
I
let
know.
Their voices be heard. So I, for one, am very, I'm delighted to hear that it's something you feel very strongly about and that you're right behind it, Jim. Well done.
Oh, the abuse of the vulnerable and the innocent is just, it's unspeakable. It's absolutely unspeakable, and this has to be exposed. You know, my small job really is to shine a light into the darkness. You know, that's what we're all doing, and it's very important. That's why I've highlighted Holly's case as best I could on my website and on my Facebook group, because that needs to be exposed. Because as you understand, as we're all starting to understand now, that this goes right to the heart of the establishment.
Indeed, and obviously you're very well known for your work in the Corrs. Obviously, you were the drummer, a very successful pop act. How does your sisters and the rest of your family take to your work, and what do they say to you? Are they encouraging, or do they just not really care?
Well, starting. First of all, I do love the drums, but actually, I play the keyboards in the back.
All right, that's all right. Now you say that, I remember that. I'm sorry. Sorry for that mistake. Sorry.
I wouldn't expect you as a male to be looking at myself. No, I'm quite happy that you're looking at my sisters.
You just give me flashbacks to the 90s there, but watching it on RTE, you can imagine your sister playing the drums right now. I can see it clearly. But yeah, what do they say? What do they think of your work and your website?
You know, this is a personal road. This is a personal road, and not altogether easy road that I've chosen. And you know, really, when I said people ask me this question, I kind of say, well, you'd need to ask them. You know, they don't endorse my views. This is nor what I expect them to, because this is the research that I've been doing. When I came off the road about 4 years ago, and as I say, I started off with 9/11, and I went from there. And so my research has led me to understand certain things that the average person would not be able to understand and would not be able to accept and wouldn't want to accept, because, you know, if you take on board this information, well, then you've got a responsibility. What do you do with this, you know? And I had a choice. When I had discovered this information, do I bury my head in the sand and continue partying like an idiot like I was for quite a while? Or do I actually do something about this? And sometimes we all need to do things that are not necessarily in our own best interests, but to act on our conscience.
I can relate to you a lot on that one, because as a budding journalist and as a radio presenter, it's all too easy for me to say, well, I'll just go and work at a radio station, I'll play pop music and I'll keep my mouth shut about all this stuff. But I would feel as though I was cheating, not just myself, but my listeners as well. And so that's why I've took the decision to go down the same road kind of as yourself, I suppose you could say. But let's just go through some of the things, the issues raised on your website. The very first one, top of the latest news section, is fluoride, aspartame and Agenda 21. What can you say about that? Because aspartame really annoys me, because sometimes you want a bit of chewing gum and you can't eat no chewing gum without having a slow kill weapon in it. It's crazy to say, but that's the truth. Aspartame is really, really poisonous, and it's been shown that it gives people tumours, cancers, all sorts of things. What do you make of this whole thing? And I know the Republic of Ireland has fluoride water, but Northern Ireland doesn't. And some parts of England has fluoride in the water, but some other places don't. But what can you say about the government poisoning people's water?
And that's exactly what is happening. They're putting poison into the water in the Republic of Ireland. And with the little bit of research I've done on fluoride, I absolutely believe that it was put into our water supply for sinister purposes. I fully believe that now. Because with the information that is out there, that it fuels cancer, that it makes you docile, it drops your IQ by 20 to 30 points. The bloody Nazis used it in the concentration camps to keep their prisoners docile. It was used in the Soviet gulags as well. This is what it's all about. It's about keeping the general population dumbed down. So for times like this, when they're making their move, the intergenerational plan to bring in this one world government system. And they want everybody distracted with curry, distracted with X Factor and all this other mindless entertainment that is on TV, as well as the body being under chemical and biological attack with aspartame, with fluoride, genetically modified food, to dumb us down so that we're not aware, so that we're more docile, more malleable to government intention, and more malleable to shadow government intention. That's what it's all about, I believe.
And over here in England, I know there's a campaign in Manchester to prevent water fluoridation, but one of the things they're saying is that kids on council estates can't afford toothpaste. I know for a fact you can go into Morrison's and get toothpaste for 17p. I refuse to believe that anybody, if it comes to it, can't afford 17p or 25p toothpaste. It's just a ridiculous reason, and it's very, very weak argument why you need to poison everyone's water.
Totally. I mean, you know, there may be benefits if sodium fluoride is applied topically to the teeth, but not to ingest it to put it into our systems.
Yeah,
it's crazy. I mean, you know, look at somebody that takes too much fluoride, they get fluorosis of the teeth. I mean, that shows you what is happening in the bones within the body. If that is happening on the surface of the teeth, that's happening in the bones. So, yeah, I've joined forces with a couple of great people in Ireland, and we're going to try and we're going to do our best to get rid of this toxic poison out of our water supply. Otherwise, you know, because it's the only other water route is that people get reverse osmosis filters to try and take it out. It's not easy to get fluoride out of the water, you know.
It's not, and if you were to ring your doctor and say, listen, I've just took a full glass of my mouthwash and I don't feel too good, they would probably say, well, you've got a bit of fluoride poison, you're probably in a lot of trouble there, mate.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're drinking that in your Ribena every day, you're drinking it after you play tennis, you're drinking it, you know, first thing in the morning, it's not going to be good for you. And another thing which is increasing, I don't know what the situation is in Ireland with chemtrails, but I can see them in Salford. I've got photographs of them in Manchester here. We've got pictures sent to me from all over the UK, even callers on this very show from France, telling us that they've got heavy, heavy chemtrail spraying going on. And of course, spraying stuff in the sky, that also will be affecting our health and be diluting our water with all sorts of unsavoury sort of chemicals and stuff. What do you know about chemtrails, and have you seen any in Ireland?
You know, I haven't got a section on my website yet about it, but I'm going to have to put it up because it's becoming an issue that we cannot ignore. I've been looking at the work of Clifford Carnicum and the analysis of the chemtrail fallout, and what his results has yielded is like incredible amounts of aluminium, incredible amounts of barium, and incredible amounts of ethylene dibromide, which is basically causes infertility, it causes sterility. The barium basically it attacks the immune system, it attacks the T cells, and it prevents the immune system from doing its job properly. And aluminium, as we know, has been linked to calling Alzheimer's. So, and they've done surveys of snow mountain regions in America, and they discovered that the aluminium and barium levels are something like 64,000 times what they should be at. You know, 64,000 times the amount before above what the government should take action on. So, what I now come to believe. In relation to chemtrails is that geoengineering is the smokescreen, but depopulation is the game.
Yeah, you're right. And they've even been kind of tying into the global warming thing, saying that these contrails, as they call them, but they're not contrails, they reflect some of the Earth's the sun's rays and make the Earth cooler. So they're kind of they're calling it geoengineering of the atmosphere, trying to combat climate change. It's an absolute farce, isn't it?
It's absolute rubbish. But the other thing we need to be very wary of here is, you see, with the aluminium, they're blocking out the sunlight. So we're like plants. We need a certain amount of safe sunshine on our exposed skin so that we can manufacture vitamin D. What is most prevalent in a lot of people with degenerative diseases is a lack of vitamin D. And so this is another way of making us sick. And of course, you know, the same people, I believe, that were ultimately behind and ordered 9/11 to happen, and 7/7, and the Bali bombings, and the Madrid bombings, are the same people that are in control of the World Health Organization, and in control of the big pharmaceutical companies. And the big pharmaceutical companies do not profit from our wellness.
Indeed, it's a bit like peace is the worst thing for business, for arms dealers. Well, similar, likewise, for the pharmaceutical companies, everyone in good health would put them out of business.
Yes.
And you're right when you say all these things tie in together, because when you look at things like the Club of Rome, Bilderberg Group, Council on Foreign Relations, it's the same names popping up every time, and especially in my eyes, the Rockefeller family, because I've got like a kind of spider diagram that I've made of David Rockefeller in the middle and all how it branches out from, you've got Standard Oil on one side, you've got Chase Manhattan Bank on the other, you've got the Federal Reserve System, so they're printing the dollars. You know, he is a very multifaceted man. He's got, talk about fingers and pies.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure he funded Hitler through the Standard Oil Company.
Indeed. And,
absolutely, and I believe that the Rockefeller family in America, who are descendants of the female side of the Rothschild bloodline, are very much involved in this. And they, you know, we've all, I'm sure you're very, very familiar with the quotes that Prince Philip has made on occasions where he says that when he dies, he wants to come back as a virus and wipe out 80% of humanity. You know, most people hear that and think, God, what a silly old man. But no, from my research, they all think like that.
Yeah.
I mean, if you search, go do a search in Google now, just search for depopulation and genocide quotes, you would be flabbergasted at the very powerful people like Ted Turner that are saying, that are talking about how we need to drastically reduce the world's population. And I say for any of those people that want to bring about a reduction in the world's population, they need to put themselves first in line for the coal.
You're right. It's if anyone thinks there is too many people in the world, well, you know what to do. We've got quite a comical message there on MSN. Let me see. It's from Alan. I'm just trying to find it here. He says, could Jim go up in his plane and follow some of the planes that are putting out the chemtrails so we know where they come from?
Well, you know, I considered doing that. Because not myself. I can't fly enough. I have to be below cloud. This is what we need to do. I was in a commercial jet flying at about 35,000 feet, and we happened to cross a chemtrail at one point, and it was the most dirtiest, filthiest line that I've ever seen. And it's so sickening that we are breathing in this stuff. And as I'm sure you know, that hospitals and doctors have been inundated with people now with upper respiratory problems, asthma, and it's all coming from these. And we've got to get together as you know, with the establishment and with the judiciary system, it's there to protect the elite above them. It's not there for the people. And I think Anne, of course, and Holly and Robert are very aware of that, as an awful lot of people are now. So it's really, it's down to the people of the world, really, to unite, get together, and to rid the world of this cancer.
Indeed. AM, do you want to comment on that?
I do. I'm very pleased to hear you saying what you're saying. I think particularly about the more and more people that kind of are starting to wake up to all this as well, Jim. I'm a great believer in the collective consciousness of human beings coming together and having that kind of hundredth monkeying effect of waking each other up. I really am a great believer that there's more to us than this five sense reality that we're told that there is.
Yes.
And that's one of the things that has allowed me to continue to, in inverted commas, broadcast what it is that I believe in. In other words, it doesn't just have to be through the media literally broadcasting, but how I sense within myself what I know to be true, what I know to be not real, what I'm told about, etc. I know that we're all constantly broadcasting something within ourselves that is affecting the collective, and there's nothing flaky about this, far from it. It's just science. It's just a science that isn't discussed very often, because why would you let people know about those things? It empowers them, you know? And these are the kind of things you were referring to earlier. Keep everybody dead, keep everybody extracted, and talking about the latest fashions and who's wearing what and who's going out with who. As long as people are not looking at the bigger picture, and as long as they're distracted, and these are the things that we're seeing with Holly's case, for example, in the media, why these things aren't considered to be important, because really what Victoria Beckham's wearing this week is more important to some people, and I don't mean to sound like I'm being dismissive, far from it, but that's the reality of what we're constantly being told to do, to be distracted from what's going on. So I'm a great believer in the collective, Jim, and I think that's really having a big knock-on effect here. And just finally, there's a guy I know who's a very good friend of mine. You kick me for not knowing the name of his website properly, but it's a very interesting man called Andrew Johnson. I think it's checktheevidence.com or Check the Evidence. Very interesting work he's done on chemtrails, and I'd advise anybody. In fact, I'd even say to you, Tony, come and have him as a guest on your show sometime. He can speak about the subject marvellously. Anyway, good to hear from you, Jim. Thanks.
You're a very articulate lady, and it's a pleasure to listen to you, Anne. there is an unstoppable awakening occurring now. And, I believe, my own personal belief is that we've been born at this particular time for a particular reason, for a particular purpose. I believe that I found mine. One of my personal purposes is to play music and provoke emotion through the playing of music. I love that. And also is to tell the truth as I see it. And that's exactly what you're doing. We're living in extremely interesting times, and it's very important that we band together and spread the truth as we see it. Because as I believe, and as I said, there really is an unstoppable awakening occurring, thankfully, thanks be to God.
OK, Can I just ask you, Jim, obviously I'm from Ireland as well, and I don't live there at the minute, but I've obviously spent most of my life there, and I know that these kind of issues are very much not really on the topics, you know, very little talk about, at least when I was back home, about this sort of thing. How are you finding people in Ireland when you respond to this kind of information? And also, I mean, through your website, do people give you good feedback, or do you get much criticism on... just how do you think the Irish are taking it? Because I know maybe they might have had a wake-up call with having to have two referendums on the Lisbon Treaty. Was that a wake-up call, do you think?
Yeah, it was for people. And I think particularly in that there was an incredible amount seemed to suddenly defect and move over to the yes side, which just did not make sense. Actually, a guy called... Of course, Christopher Story, who was a former advisor to Margaret Thatcher, did a very interesting piece on the Lisbon Treaty, and of course he believed that it was null and void, that it was stolen, as I believe it, and certainly a couple of friends of mine who had been literally following the ballot boxes to make sure that there was no shenanigans going on, saw some very suspect activity. But they were basically told, Ireland was warned by Etienne Davignon, that they, you know, they better vote yes to this treaty. So it was going through no matter what. And, you know, we can just... I was going to say something else, I went out of my head. But, you know, that's all we can do is just try and spread the word as best as we can, you know. But the reaction from a lot of people, I find, on the ground, outside of the mainstream media, is very, very positive. As long as I don't go too far out there, and of course, if you make a mistake, or if you start talking about things in the mainstream media that you're going to lose people on, well, then you know other elements within the mainstream media are going to jump on that and use that against you to dilute your credibility. And so it's what I receive and experience here in Ireland is no different to what anybody else experiences who has decided to align themselves with the truth and spread it.
Indeed. Okay, just got a few questions here from listeners. You can answer some of these in a word or a sentence, or you can go into more detail if you want. Alan says, is Jim thinking of making a band for truth? Just throwing that out there.
Band for truth. No, I don't know. It's food for thought. I don't know.
No worries. No worries. Keep them coming. A question for Jim. What would be, in his view, the most important facet of fighting in the New World Order?
It's spreading the word. I mean, that's what I believe. I know it's spreading the word within the collective of what is really going on. Wakening up people. I think that's the most important thing to do. And then it's going to be, you know, when we band together more, it's going to be peaceful non-compliance.
Indeed.
That's going to be, it's got to be peaceful, because if it's not, if there's rioting, that's going to completely play into the New World Order's hands.
You're correct. As Alex Jones says, it is an info war, an information war.
Yes.
And the more information, truth that we can get out there, the better. Also,
it's the way I liken it is, you know, you make a decision, and we're all born onto this planet with free will. You can become an agent of Satan, and you will get power, and you get materialism beyond your dreams, like an awful lot of people have. These characters that we're discussing, or you could decide to become an agent of the divine force, what I call the divine force, which is God. And you know, that's what I've chosen. I want to be an agent of God.
I agree with you 100%. Jim is not alone. That got a message here that says, our personal strength is joined with everyone to become collective strength of the daredevil ninjas fighting for Holly and all children everywhere. Thank you very much. I forget who sent that, but I appreciate that. And also a quick question for Jim. Does he have contact with Sinead O'Connor, and does he know her opinions on how she lost her career for trying to expose and inform people? Something I didn't know anything about. It's from a listener. Jim, do you know anything about this?
Funnily, there just tonight, I joined a Facebook group which was in support of Sinead and how she had sacrificed her career in speaking out about the Catholic Church. I've only met her a couple of times. She's a Facebook friend of mine, but I have to say that I just have deep respect for her by the way that she stuck to her guns and she spoke her mind when it wasn't cool to speak your mind about the against the Catholic Church. And you know, the thing is, I know in relation to the abuse, I know priests who are walking saints. I'm sure you do as well. I've friends who are fantastic human beings, you know, who are just so appalled by what happened. So it's, you know, we have to be very careful and not just kind of label the Catholic Church as being completely evil. It's not. There's a small element within this who are engaging in activities with young people that's just apparent, unspeakable. But it is a small fraction. That's what we must be aware of.
Indeed. Well, Jim, we're almost out of time. I'm hoping to open up the phone lines for callers for the last 15 minutes of the show, but I'm still joined by Anne and Holly and Robert and AM. So just a few questions, a few words. They want to say thanks and bye, I think, to you. Robert, do you want to come in?
Yes, I do, Jim. It's nice to talk to you again, Jim, and thank you very much for coming on the programme, and thank you for all the support that you've given to Anne and Holly and myself. You've been absolutely fantastic, and it's a great honour for us to have your support. It really is. And just a little thank you to all the people in Ireland who've supported us. They've been absolutely terrific, haven't they, Anne?
Yes,
absolutely
they
terrific.
And thank what about you very much, Jim.
And what about those two guys in Dublin over the weekend? Yeah. Kevin Flanagan and John Deegan, real heroes.
Thank you. It's the least I could do. And also in Northern Ireland, I'd just like to mention the name of Sandra Barr. She's been absolutely fantastic in trying to get this information. And she's really dedicated a large part of her life to exposing this case, Sandra Barr. So and there's many, many others like her that are doing the same.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you very much, Jim.
Not at all.
All right, Jim. Thank you so much for joining us. You've got a lot of love here from everyone in the studio and everyone on the MSN. Giving you lots of respect here and lots of love for you and your sisters, I must add. And it's been a pleasure talking to you. We really appreciate your time, and keep up the good work and keep working on the website. And I do promote this as often as I can on the show, jimcore.com. And I do get a lot of stuff from there. I do visit that quite a lot, and you do a really excellent job with the website. So just thanks again for joining us. Thanks for your work on your website, and I look forward to speaking to you again in the future.
Thank you, Tony, and love right back at you, and Anne, and Holly, and Robert, and to everybody listening, and, you know, take care of yourselves, and, you know, we will win this battle. We will win this battle.
Thank you very much. There it goes, folks. Thank you very much, Jim Corr. All right, then, we're going to move on with a couple of tracks now. I'm trying to think here. I've got one for you here, Robert. I've lined this up especially for you. I played this when you were on the show a few weeks ago, and I thought it was particularly funny, so I'm going to play it again. Ready? You ready? All right, then. That was KRS-One. Robert, did you like that?
It's giving me nightmares.
I'm sorry. I couldn't resist.
No, you should be ashamed of yourself.
It was actually the last time I spoke to you, this is before you got rearrested. I played that song, and then sure enough, the police came for you.
Probably listening right now. They're probably on the way as we speak.
Well, listen, folks, we're all peaceful here. We're all friendly. We just want to fight corruption, and I think that any law enforcement officer should be fighting for law enforcement. And there's a lot of stuff going on which is absolutely ridiculous, and I think deep down in their hearts they know what's really going on, and just I think maybe a few more of them should maybe have to take a pay cut or lose their salary and just go on and fight for freedom and fight for justice. But anyway, don't let me rant here. We've got Lorraine on the line. Lorraine, welcome to the Tony Legend Show.
Hi.
All right, now you just called up there during that track. What would you like to say?
Well, I'd just like to say that, my first, kind of introduction to Robert and Holy Greg's case was via David Icke's, round about January, February. And then when I went on and sort of, watched YouTube and Robert was, talking about what happened with Holy Greg and kind of, was totally flabbergasted about it. And then the next thing I knew was he was arrested in Aberdeen. And then it's progressed as it has, as we've seen, you know, and as it escalated, it's kind of made it even more what are they trying to hide, blah, blah, blah. So what I would like to say is I totally 150% believe in Robert, totally believe in Holy Greg, and it's such a disgusting case. But, you know, listening to, the BBC guy tonight, Daly, I'm not being disrespectful to Mark Daly or Daly, that was talking, I don't know how to put this, you know, he sounded in some aspects, people pick this up as ingenuine. It also sounded to me scared. Now, you know, I don't know why he just didn't sound, you know, the way he was talking and what he was saying and what he was challenging with regards to Anne and about whatever mental health and things like that, you know, blah, 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 and whatever's confided. He sounded to me he was scared. And he said, you know, I don't know, it just didn't ring true to me. I might be rambling like an idiot here, but following the story through from January, February onwards, I don't think I hope he does meet up with you guys and talk off air maybe, but I don't think he did any credit for himself and the story with the BBC, not at all. And, you know, Robert, you know, and Holly and Anne, you know, there's so many people behind you and it's still going to get out there.
No worries. Well, we've got a couple of, I'll just read out a couple of MSN because I'm way behind. I've got so much stuff and I'm hoping to get through it before the finish show in 10 minutes. But a couple of, Muttley said on the on MSN, he said Mark Daly sounds very uncomfortable.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah, that's exactly
someone else
it.
Said Mark Daly is thinking fast, go and go. And I understand, I'm sure Mark Daly, credit to him for coming on for a start because he definitely had guts to come on the show.
Perfect.
And it must have been very difficult for him to say what he said, especially with Anne and Robert and stuff here. And I'm sure his adrenaline was kicking in and it wasn't really, you know, ideal for him to be in the show. He didn't want to really come on the show,
of
but
course.
He kind of had to in light of various circumstances, which we won't all go into. But, I mean, he definitely did sound uncomfortable, but I think that's understandable. But, yes, well, it's a pleasure to hear your opinions anyway, and that seems to be the general consensus on the MSN so far. Anything else you'd like to say, Lorraine, before you go?
I would really just like to say, you know, there's so much of this kind of, like, you know, divide and conquer and, you know, conspiracies and, you know, people, you know, whatever. And I didn't catch the lady's name that was talking about David Icke. I mean, I got introduced to David Icke around about 1993, started reading his books. He was, like, the biggest conspiracy nutter out there meant to be at the time. And I'm not a I love David Icke fan. But everything that he was, when I read, you know, many years ago now, seems to be quite a few years ago, they are actually being proven to be facts. And removing that from the side, you know, when you have this other side of things, which is like the whole hierarchy and what's happening with the likes of Holly Gregg, being exposed and the Pope, I have to say, and then you've got the chemtrails, which you had your friend Corn. You know, they might be trying to dumb us down, but come on, we are really waking up here. We really are waking up here, you know, and we should stand beside each other and wake up and keep waking people up and keep talking to people and spreading the word.
No worries. Lorraine, thank you so much for the call. And I'm going to let you go because I'm going to try and fit some more calls in before 10 o'clock. But thanks for getting in touch tonight, okay?
Okay, thank you. Bye.
No worries.
Bye.
All right, folks, if anyone wants to call in right now, now's the time to do it. 0161-202-1677. That's 0161-202-1677. And we'll hopefully take the calls live on air. I just want to read out a few MSN stuff because you've really been sending me so much stuff tonight, but we've been so busy with trying to referee the Mark Daly the everyone else conversation that we had, and then also we had Jim Corr, obviously, who was a fantastic guest. Some things here I'd just like to go through. Someone on the MSN there said that the fact that Mark Daly came on the show shows perhaps that there is a part of him that wants the truth. Just a reminder also, this comes from Nick about Bilderberg, which is from the 3rd to the 6th of June this year, and he'll be leaving to go to Bilderberg. He's going to go and cover it, and he's going to be leaving on the 2nd of June from Liverpool to Barcelona. And what would you like to say there, Robert? You would like to come in?
Well, I'd just like to thank Lorraine. Thank you very much for your support. It's very kind of you, and with wonderful people like you backing us, I do feel that someday, or not too long, we hope, the truth will come out. So thank you, Lorraine.
I think we've got a caller online. You're on. You're live on air, so please don't swear. This is Tony Legend Show. Hello.
Hi, it's Greg. I was on your programme last week.
Yes, oh, Greg Watkins.
Yeah. I think there's a difficult situation developing with the Holly Gregg story. I have said it very clearly throughout, and as you know, I run the Stolen Kids -holly.blogspot.com for and on behalf of Robert Greene, Holly, and her mother. The situation is frustration. Many things are true about Holly's case. Many of them can be proven categorically. But many of the points, out of frustration, have been presented as proven when they are, at this stage, merely allegations. Had I any doubt that Holly had been cruelly abused, that her mother has had basically 10 to 15 years of extreme difficulty, and that Robert has very much his heart in the right place, I would not have become involved. I believe that there has been abuse. I believe many of the things in frustration have been over-egged. To talk of things like Holly's Army does no service to the real case. It may be a catchy jingo for fringe press and promotion. However, this is a case that will end up in the courts.
Hope you're right.
This is a case that will have to be presented by barristers. This is a case that must be founded on the grains of solid evidence, and we must try and prove the balance, not publish the balance.
Indeed, I agree with you, and that's what I said to Mark Daly, that I think that maybe all this kind of information, we're going through the documents, we're going through the proof, it should be happening in the court of law and not on Manchester Radio Online.
I would agree with you, and may I congratulate Mark Daly, and I do not for a moment think that he was misleading your audience. I think he was, like all of us, nervous.
Of course, I agree, yeah. Adrenaline would have been pumping.
Yeah, he is trying to defend his reputation, which has been deeply slurred, possibly correctly. But there must be evidence put in place that is irrefutable on every point if we are to win this case. And we're not just trying to do it for Holly, or for Anne, or for Robert. What we're trying to do is get a systemic and endemic problem in Scotland overturned. The problem of abuse, which is commonplace in Scotland. We have Dunblane, we have Queen Victoria's Boys' School, we have a series of cases like this. And it has been going on for years and years and years. We have 10,000 lawyers in Scotland with a population of 5 million. And they all work effectively out of two offices, one in Edinburgh and one in Glasgow. They all swap between each other's firms. Promotion may well be to the firm down the corridor. It is an utterly incestuous relationship that needs the curtains drawn back and fresh air thrown on it so that Scotland can have a chance in a modern world. Scotland's justice system is arcane beyond belief. Sorry, I'm starting to rant.
You're all right. We've only got 2 minutes left, folks. So, AM, you would like to say anything?
Just a very quick one on the HollyDemandsJustice.org. We're asking everybody if they could please go to the general election candidates. Politicians, paedophile pledge to support Holly and other abused children. Very briefly, there's a pledge which you can print off. You're asked to take it to your parliamentary candidate in your area of the constituency where you live and ask them to basically solemnly swear to basically seek out the truth of what happened to Holly Greg and to her family. And also we've got to mention, that's on the HollyDemandsJustice.org site. But we also have a public meeting in Edinburgh for Holly on the 1st of May. I forget what time it
yes,
starts.
It's at 12 noon outside St Giles Cathedral. And I should also just add that there's also an event in Aberdeen, the Aberdeen 500 on the 5th of June. And you can get all the details on hollydemandsjustice.org and all the very, very good information on Stolen Kids, the shocking story of Holly Gregg.
No problem. And I'd just like to have a quick chat with you before we go. What's your thoughts on this evening and everything that we've kind of talked about and what Mark said and stuff?
Well, I'm still very angry at what Mark has said and what Mark did in the beginning of all of this, but, he's got his opinion and we've got ours, so we've just got to, live in this world together.
No problem. Well, we're pretty much out of time. Thank you all for joining me tonight. Anne, Holly, Robert and AM, and Pandora's Box is up next in a couple of minutes' time, so that's pretty much all we've got time for. I just have to mention as well, Nick said to me on the MSN here that he has gone to Bilderberg and he would quite like... possibly someone to come with him. So if anyone is up for a mission to Bilderberg, get in touch with myself via the Manchester Radio Online Facebook group page. And Anne, would you like to say?
Holly Legend, you are the future of broadcasting, truth broadcasting.
You know what, I had your
more
mic.
More power to you, man.
I had your mic down. I didn't hear what you said.
Do you agree with you? So agree with AM. Not that we're trying to creep our way into another show, but...
Great radio.
All right, thank you very much, folks. Well, thank you to all the listeners. I have to say that I'm really sorry. I've got so much information here in front of me. I haven't even been able to get through it all because we're live and I'm sweat pouring down my face here. But thank you very much to Lee, Tommy, Ruth, Nick, Alan, John, Hayes, Justy, Gabriel, Greg, Jeffrey, Muttley, everyone else that's on MSN and stuff, and Ace Riley as well. Sorry I didn't get to you tonight, but hope you've enjoyed the show. We're going to go down and sort out the podcast pretty soon, and hopefully we'll have a link available online that we'd like you to share very much with everybody, and let everyone listen to tonight's show, because it's been quite an epic broadcast. Thank you very much to Jim Corr. Thank you to Mark Daly for his contribution as well. Thank you to everyone else who I forgot about, but it's been a hectic show. And Pandora's Box is up next. Thank you very much for listening. I'm going to finish up with a bit more reggae. Thanks to Ruth, by the way, for all the reggae, because it's absolutely amazing. This is Anthony B with Striving. Catch you next week.